So the verse is, all these cities and villages are flourishing in all respects, because the herbs and grains are in abundance. The trees are full of fruits, the rivers are flowing, the hills are full of minerals, and the oceans full of wealth. And this is all due to your glancing over them. So just to put the verse in context, chapter 8 is Queen Kunti's prayers to Lord Krishna after he saved Parikshit in the womb of, please help me, Uttara, that's right, in the womb of Uttara. And the verse just before this, Queen Kunti says, O Gadadha, Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful, but when you leave it, it will no longer be so. And in this verse, she's explaining all the beauties and opulences that are appearing in their kingdom because of the presence of the Lord. So now we move to the purport. How many of you have got a smartphone on you and you've got the purport in front of you? One, two, three amongst the ladies. Fantastic. Amongst the men? One, two. Okay. So we're going to read a bit of the purport at a time. And then I was going to ask people with smartphones, if you'd like to share your smartphones with people next to you, to say in their own words what they understand. Because the Bhagavatam class is our one time to really associate with Prabhupada's purport. We're associating with him. So it'd be nice to actually connect to his purport. So if you've got your smartphones, follow with me. You'll see where I've stopped. And that's the section that we're going to comment on. Not comment on, just repeat in our own words what we understand Prabhupada to be saying. We're not going to comment, we're just going to repeat. So the first bit of the purport is, okay, if you've got a smartphone, please read with me. Human prosperity flourishes by natural gifts and not by gigantic industrial enterprises. The gigantic industrial enterprises are products of a godless civilization, and they cause the destruction of the noble aims of human life. The more we go on increasing such troublesome industries to squeeze out the vital energy of the human being, the more there will be unrest and dissatisfaction of the people in general, although a few only can live lavishly by exploitation. So I'm going to start with the ladies because they get very little chance to say what Prabhupada is saying. Can I have a volunteer to just pick up one or two points from that section? And the gentleman, maybe you can look at your smartphones and see what you would understand. I've actually got a copy of the purport here. Would anyone like to use it? I'll need that list back at the end. So you can just repeat it because it'll take a very time consuming, and I'll repeat after you. So Jayanti, you want to say what you understand from this bit?
I do understand that nowadays economy with all that.
Tell me which part of the. Which part of the purport are you understanding?
Okay, yeah. The gigantic products of God. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, the gigantic industrial enterprise, a product of godless civilization. So, what I understand is that nowadays economy is not based on the principles which actually the creator designed the world to work with.
Wonderful. So Jayanti did an understanding of this part of the purport. The gigantic industrial enterprises are products of a godless civilization. And her understanding is that Prabhupada is telling us this: the principles on which our economy is based is not in harmony with the principles given by God. Did I understand you correctly?
Thank
so
you.
Someone from the men would like to just take something from that. We're not commenting. We're just putting in our own words what we understand Prabhupada to say. You can take another part of the verse. Anyone got a smartphone? Govinda, can you do so? You don't have a smartphone. Maybe Cyrus, you can share. Or Cyrus, you got the phone. Can you put a part of that, even a sentence?
So the gigantic industrial enterprises are a product of godless civilization. So my understanding?
Yeah.
Okay. That because we're not in touch with the laws of nature, which is put in place by God, and so we come up with so many schemes, intellectual schemes to make life comfortable and to make living. And because we're not in tune with the rhythm of life and the cosmic rhythm, so therefore we're out of balance.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
God's nature has got a certain cosmic rhythm.
Yeah.
But we are so preoccupied with creating further comfort that everything we do puts us out of sync with the natural rhythm of life. Yeah. That's how you understand the gigantic industrial enterprise. Any lady got any other part of that purport that they would like to highlight, that what Prabhupada is saying? Go ahead, Avila. Not the same sentence. Let's move to another sentence. And maybe the gentleman can look at that part and tell me what they think.
I wanted to understand this last sentence. The more we go on increasing such troublesome industries to squeeze out the vital energy of a human being, the more there will be unrest and dissatisfaction of the people in general, although a few only can live lavishly by exploitation.
Okay.
So this industrialization, it causes common people are kind of exploited and they feel more and more dissatisfied. And only few can live very comfortably due to this industrialization.
So, Davila, she did this part of the purport. The more we go on increasing such troublesome industries to squeeze out the vital energy of the human being, the more there will be unrest and dissatisfaction of the people in general, although few only can live lavishly by exploitation. And her understanding was that the current economy is such that you have a few fat cats, a few people who get very rich, but the majority of people are very dissatisfied and their lives are unhappy. Did I understand you correctly? Is it true? Is what Prabhupada is saying true? Do we agree with that? Is that what's happening? There's a few corporate, you know, I've heard there's like 10 families that hog 80% of the world's wealth, and then few middle class, and then a lot of very poor people, homeless or refugees. So Prabhupada's making the point that the current economy is completely, as you've all said, out of sync with God's laws, and the effect is that we create a lot of trouble and create prosperity for a few, but poverty for the most. Do we agree with that, yeah? So I just want to pick up a couple of words from this part of the purport and look at those few phrases a little bit more deeply. One of the phrases is the noble aims of life. Prabhupada says, and they cause the destruction of the noble aims of human life. Can I ask, what does Prabhupada mean by the noble aims of human life? You don't need the text in front of you to unpack that. If you were to unpack what Prabhupada... Go ahead.
I was thinking that it means that to understand our relationship with God. That is what the human life is meant for.
Okay, you say the noble aim of human life is to understand our relationship with God. Very nice. I just want to... because you don't have the text in front of you, Prabhupada puts it in the plural. He says the noble aims. So it's plural. It's more than one. Anyone else? Someone from the men, Govinda, you want to have a noble aims? What do you, if you were to put that in your own words, what would you think Prabhupada means?
As well.
Pardon? Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking there's one aim, but there's many aims. So what are the many aims? Well, I mean, if, for example, to become a pure devotee, you have to develop certain qualities. So these qualities that a pure devotee has could be the aims of life.
Okay, so you're saying that the aims are all the qualities we have to develop on the way to becoming a pure devotee.
Or the qualities that develop as part of our being a pure devotee.
Okay.
But there's also a sort of kind of mundane answer, dharma, artha, kama, moksha.
Yes. You're saying, one thought that came to mind is that as we try to become pure devotees, different qualities are developing, so they could be the aim. Or you called it a mundane answer. So it's materialistic. It's not spiritual at all. It's dharma, artha, karma, moksha. Did I understand you correctly? Yes. That would have been mine too. But I don't think it's mundane. I think it's on a part of our progressing to prema. The Vedas talk about four aims of human life, and Lord Chaitanya adds one. So let's... I can't even show you the evidences. I had all the evidences from Prabhupada's books to show you. Okay, never mind. So I'll read to you the evidences. This is from the Bhagavatam 4.8.41. Prabhupada says, any person who desires the fruits of the four principles, religiosity, what's religiosity in the Sanskrit? Dharma. So you can say it with me. Dharma. That means religiosity. Dharma. Economic development, what's the Sanskrit for that? Artha. You can say it with me, especially ladies, we don't know anything because we'd never speak. But we need to speak to learn. The way Prabhupada says, the way you learn, you hear and you repeat. And that way you begin to assimilate. So, you know, dharma is religiosity. Artha is economic development. Sense gratification, what's the Sanskrit for that? Karma. Great. This is the lady who does speak. And what's the last one? Moksha. And what's that? Liberation. The men are allowed to join in. I just feel as if the ladies need more encouragement than the men. So I don't want to discourage you. So Prabhupada says, any person who desires the fruits of the four principles, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end, liberation, should engage himself in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for worship of his lotus feet yields the fulfillment of all of these. So it's okay to want to be able to survive in this world and live happily. It's okay, because then our minds are peaceful and we can get on with the real business of life. And it's one of the aims to create a peaceful, harmonious life where we have sufficient. It's considered a noble aim. It's a pious aim. And then Lord Chaitanya adds one. So this is again a quote from Prabhupada. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that above moksha, above liberation, there is love of God. That is wanted. Prema pum arto mahan. So that is the ultimate. So we want to move. We want to have sufficient in this world. We want to be satisfied so that our minds are not always agitated. And then we can get on with the real business of achieving love of God. Would anyone agree with that? That could be the noble aims he's talking about? Or anyone have a different opinion? No? Okay. I wish we had the slides, but we don't. So another phrase that Prabhupada uses in that part of the purport that we read is he talks about these troublesome industries. So again, ladies, I'm going to start with you. What do you think Prabhupada means by troublesome industries? Lying to us, okay, industries that lie to us. The gentleman? Pardon? Slaughterhouses. Is there a Sanskrit term Prabhupada uses for troublesome industries? Can anyone think of that? Ugrakama, yes. Troublesome industries. Ugrakama. So we're going to look a little bit about Ugrakama. This is from The Light of the Bhagavat, a book Prabhupada wrote, one of the very first ones, The Light of the Bhagavat. Verse 37, so Prabhupada says this, too much of an external view of the world gives rise to an overly large scale and difficult type of industry and trade known as ugra karma. So he calls it difficult, troublesome, is ugra karma. The word ugra means hard or difficult, and karma means task. The development of hard and difficult industrial undertakings always hinders the progressive cultivation of the human spirit. So we have these industrial agriculture that's making the land barren. We have, you know, industrial housing. We have everything is industrial and large scales, but we're draining the earth and the rivers and the oceans and human energy and time of all our resources, because everything is hard. So I keep getting the manner, thing coming up on my screen blocking what I want to see. Okay. So there's a few other synonyms that Prabhupada uses for Ugra Karma. So he said terrible here, these troublesome, he's used troublesome industries here. But there's a few other synonyms he uses whenever he translates the word Ugra Karma. Pungent. One of the meanings of pungent means creating difficulty, creating misery. If something is very pungent, it can be acidic, very harsh. So pungent, fierce, terrible, painful, ferocious, stern, severe. So Prabhupada is saying the current industry is based on ukra karma. It's very troublesome. It causes pain. It's very severe. It's very harsh. So just a few comments I wanted to make on that ukra karma is literally destroying our... Think of some of the things it's destroying. What is our current...
The oceans.
It's destroying our oceans. Sometimes you'll see whole islands of plastic and all the biodiversity, all the life, all the corals, everything has been destroyed. Countless species of fish have become extinct. And the fish that currently exist, they've got plastic in them. They're all got cancer and all other kinds of disease that's passed on to the consumer. So the oceans, what else has been destroyed, ladies? The soil is being destroyed. Even so-called organic farming, because it's done on this industrial scale, completely drains the earth of all its nutrients. And after them growing there for a while, it becomes arid, it becomes like desert. You know, it says that by year what, there'll be water wars and there'll be starvation. There'll be real food shortages. We're very used to the idea of just going to Tesco or Asda or something and picking up our grocery. But the way that the food is grown is such that our children or our grandchildren may actually experience difficulty. And that's why the simple living part of Prabhupada's formula is very, very important, that we begin to grow food organically as households. Before the Second World War, every household grew food in their front and back gardens, not lawn. You know, and that's the intelligent way everyone grows, and that we bring it, you re-nourish the earth. You don't drain it with these heavy tractors and heavy, you know, destructive ugra karma. So, yeah, we're destroying our oceans, we're destroying our soil. What else are we destroying? Can anyone think of anything? The bees, yes. Then other species. Bees are absolutely crucial for our food supply, our food chain. But something like 600 or more, I don't exactly know, different species of life have been destroyed within like the last 10 years. What hasn't happened over millions of years with our ugra karma, we have managed to destroy hundreds of species of life, completely made them extinct. Everything from insects to mammals to fish to birds, we have made extinct. Someone who's not talked, please do it there back. Rainforests. Yes, we're sticking very much with our environment. You're absolutely right. We're destroying swathes of the rainforest to create slaughterhouse grazing area for bring up animals that we will send to slaughter. Going away from the environment, other things that are being destroyed. The education of the children. Yes, we're losing all life skills. Children used to grow up knowing how to grow their food, knowing how to run a household, knowing how to cook, knowing how to sew. You know, most adults don't know how to cook. We buy frozen meals. If suddenly Tesco stopped selling its frozen food aisle, range, most people wouldn't know what to do. They just don't know how to cook. Other things that come to my mind is we're destroying our physical health because we're eating rubbish. We have no exercise. We just sit in front of our smartphones or our YouTube or our movies. We're actually destroying our physical health. We're destroying our mental health. Mental health crises is at a peak. Things like loneliness, depression, panic attacks, it's really stress, which again impacts on people's physical health. chronic illness, chronic pain, from young ages is, I think, endemic. You know? Our relationships, we feel very isolated because we don't have communities where we relate, we work, we relate to each other. We live as isolated individuals. I was reading reports about it because I was preparing for this class. And the more that social media is increasing, the more isolated people feel and lonely. What other things? Morality. We are destroying our morality. We see suffering constantly and we have become immune to it. It doesn't bother us. We see on the images of the refugees running, of people being killed, bombed. We walk through the streets of London or Watford and see homeless people, beggars on the street begging. We become immune to it. We lose all morality or compassion. So Ugra Karma is really destroying everything about us, all the finer aspects and all the wealth or the artha or our health, our morality. And who benefits? Just a few people. The majority of us, the majority of people, we may be part of the few who benefit. We're all okay. We've got a roof over our head and food on the table. But the majority of the world's people, I'm talking about the world's people, are suffering because of the exploitation of the few. Like, you know, we have companies, any of you buy clothes from things like Primark? The whole communities that are destroyed because of these clothes industries. Whole communities, whole countries, their water supplies, their land, their health is destroyed because we want cheap clothes, which we keep changing every 6 months for a new fashion. So, now I'm going to go back to the purport. And anyone who's got your smartphones, please do connect with Prabhupada's purport. And anyone who's got my sheet, because I will need that sheet at the end. Is my sheet going around somewhere? I will need that at some point. It's got two sheets there, so I hope the two sheets are still there. Are they? Okay, so you can actually keep it, because I want to read the next part of the purport. So the next part you can read with me if you can. The natural gifts, such as grains and vegetables, fruits, rivers, the hills of jewels and minerals, and the seas full of pearls, are supplied by the order of the Supreme. And as he desires, material nature produces them in abundance or restricts them at times. So what did Prabhupada say there? Who heard that? I'll read it again and see if you can capture the meaning. The natural gifts such as grains and vegetables, fruits, rivers, the hills of jewels and minerals, and the seas full of pearls are supplied by the order of the Supreme. And as he desires, material nature produces them in abundance or restricts them at times. What is Prabhupada saying there? I'm going to go for some. Who's not? Have you spoken? Okay, you can say, put in your own words what Prabhupada said, yeah?
Yes, it's through Krishna's mercy he chooses. It's not up to our control to say we have to eat meat because we don't have enough vegetables or grains and stuff, but it's actually through the Supreme's choice.
Wonderful. You see, you know, the abundant things we need, all the things we need, the food we need, all the things we need are given by God. It's up to him. It's his mercy how much we get. We have really very little control over that. Did I understand you correctly? Thank you so much. Any of the men would like to put in their own words what Prabhupada said? I'm gonna ask all of you to not make comments, just put in your own words what Prabhupada said, so we connect with him.
I understand that we don't need endeavor. Everything is here. So we think we have to do some really great job to do these things, but they are here. So we don't need to hard work or to make factories or anything. It's everything is here.
That's okay. I understood. So you're saying from this section, the natural gifts such as grains and vegetables, fruits, rivers, the hills of jewels and minerals, and the seas full of pearls are supplied by the order of the Supreme. And as he desires, material nature produces them in abundance or restricts them at times. You understand, Prabhupada is saying that everything's already there. All the wealth we need, all the vegetables we need is there. We don't need to make any endeavor to get them. Yeah. Okay, anyone else have an additional understanding or different? Go ahead, Prabhu. I will repeat so we don't have to. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Also in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that...
just this section.
Yeah, so...
just this sentence. Can you put that sentence?
Sure. So in terms of our quota, we allocated our quota. And so we will get our quota as per this, as everything is actually provided for us in abundance. There's abundance, fruits, vegetables, grains, including gems, etc. in the seas that's available to us. So we will get what is due to us as per our quota. So in this purport, Prabhupada explains that you don't need to worry about going out there exploiting others in order to gain things out of your own greed. You'll get what you are supposed to get anyway.
Thank you so much. So you're saying that Prabhupada is explaining that everyone has got a quota allocated to them of the things they need. We don't need to make any... Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshmana Man Ki Jai, how long does the class go on to? It's 8:30. Okay. That we don't have to make any effort because everything is provided. I'd also just like to, I would like to have got more involvement. I'm so sorry so much time was taken putting up something that never went up, but... I'd also like to say my understanding is that whether we get these things depends on God. It's Him who decides whether we will get the things we need or we won't get the things we need. If there's water restrictions, it's God who's restricting that water. He's saying, no, enough is enough. If there's food restrictions, it's Him. So it's up to, we need to please Him. We do need to make an effort, but our effort is to please Him, because He will either provide or restrict. And then the next sentence, Prabhupada says, the natural law is that the human being may take advantage of these godly gifts by nature and satisfactorily flourish on them without being captivated by the exploitative motive of lording it over material nature. The Prabhupada says, the natural law. So he says, there is a natural law that gives us that the human being may take advantage. So there is a natural law of God that gives us the potential, the opportunity to take advantage of the gifts God provides without Ugra Karma. We don't need to do Ugra Karma, but we have to follow the natural law. So I want to come back to this idea of natural law. What is the natural law that he's talking about? Because we have to take advantage of that natural law. If we do, Prabhupada says, the human being may take advantage. That means we may not. We may lose the opportunity. It means the opportunity is there for us, but we have to take it. But if we take it, we'll get everything required. So I want to come back to that idea of natural law. But I just want to finish this part of the purport first. The more we attempt to exploit material nature according to our whims of enjoyment, the more we shall become entrapped by the reaction of such exploitative attempts. So Prabhupada is saying, if we neglect that natural law and we just do more and more Ugra Karma, I work an 8-hour shift, I work two jobs, you know, I'll do this, I'll do that. Prabhupada says, far from becoming more prosperous, you're just going to get more and more. When he says entrapped by the reaction of such exploitative attempts, karmic reactions for the future, for future lives, yes. But also in this life, we'll create more and more complications, more and more headaches for ourselves, more and more difficulties. Yeah? So I'm a little anxious about the time, so I'm going to push on. What is meant by natural law in this context? Go ahead, Davila. Okay, you're saying natural law means doing avanashram duties. Very nice light. I have a little quote from Prabhupada, from the Ishopanishad mantra, because I had a slightly different light. So your light's very good, and I'm sure you could find support for it, but I saw it slightly differently, and this is a purport from the, an extract from the Ishopanishad mantra 1 purport. Prabhupada writes, animals do not have developed consciousness by which to recognize the Lord, but a human being is sufficiently intelligent to take lessons from the Vedic literature. This is the natural law. It says, Tato Brahma Jigyasya. Now you have a human life. You have a chance. Animals don't. That's the natural law. They cannot study the Vedas. They cannot study Bhagavad Gita. They cannot study Bhagavatam. They don't have the option. The natural law is, we have the option. We may take that option, or we may choose not to. If we take it, we will understand the other laws of God, and we will prosper. If we choose not to study the Vedic literatures, we're not going to understand the other laws of God. The first natural law is we have the option to understand more, to study these books. If we study them, we'll understand more and we'll get everything we need. Yeah? I would have asked for other opinions, but I'm running a little short of time, so I'm just going to press on. So I'm going to go back to the purport we're on right now, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 40. And if you have a smartphone, please read your smartphone with me. So, if we have sufficient grains, fruits, vegetables and herbs, then what is the necessity of running a slaughterhouse and killing poor animals? A man need not kill an animal if he has sufficient grains and vegetables to eat. The flow of river waters fertilizes the fields, and there is more than what we need. Minerals are produced in the hills and the jewels in the ocean. If the human civilization has sufficient grains, minerals, jewels, water, milk, etc., then why should it hanker after terrible industrial enterprises at the cost of the labor of some unfortunate men? So I'm just going to tell you what I understand. So I understand that the main point Prabhupada is making here is that we can have a good quality life with nature's natural gifts. We don't need ugrakama. These grains, fruits, vegetables, herbs, fresh water, jewels, minerals. This is artha. This is economic development. I was watching a YouTube video several years ago, and I still do watch them, unfortunately. But this was several years ago. I forget what country. It was a small country. And someone from that country, from the terms of like our current idea of wealth, their currency doesn't do very well against our currency. But she was saying, it's so naturally wealthy. You're just walking along the beach and you'll see rubies and jewels just look amongst scattered because their country is still very kind of like ecologically friendly. They don't have this ugra karma. It's very rural. And you have fresh waters, you have jewels and minerals. But they're... Their currency exchange doesn't do very well with our currency exchange. But they have the real wealth. All these real wealth will come to us. This is artha. So I'm just going to go on in the purport. If you can read Prabhupada's purports, do, if you have it there in front of you, because we're trying to actually associate with him. It's that association with Prabhupada's purport that's going to help us. So you can read it with me, the next section of the purport. But all these natural gifts are dependent on the mercy of the Lord. What we need, therefore, is to be obedient to the laws of the Lord and achieve the perfection of human life by devotional service. The indications by Kunti Devi are just to the point. She desires that God's mercy be bestowed upon them so that natural prosperity be maintained by His grace. So whether we get these grains, fruits, vegetables, fresh water, minerals, jewels, depends on the mercy of the Lord. And whether or not we get the mercy of the Lord, it's not that He's whimsical. He's just not going to give it to us because He doesn't feel like it. No, it's whether we're obedient or not. If we obey Him, He'll provide. So I want to look a little bit more about this idea of obedience to Him. If you were to put in one word, what does it mean to be obedient? And don't use the word obedient. Love. Very nice. Any other words from the ladies? Following. Surrender. Very nice. Any others? One more from the men, because we had two from the ladies. One word, not obedient. Submissive. Very nice. I thought of the same word as Kunti, surrender. And I'm going to read you a quote. I'm sure you would have all found excerpts that would have supported the word you used as well. But I'm giving the class, so I got this excerpt. So this is an excerpt from Prabhupada, which I felt supported, that surrender, obedience, yes, surrender. So this is a morning walk. Prabhupada says, just like our students are doing, they have surrendered unto me. I am dictating. You do this. You worship like this. They are doing. This is surrender. So they're obeying Him. He's telling them what to do. They're obeying Him. Prabhupada says, this is surrender. They are doing. You chant like this. You live like this. You worship like this. This is surrender. So that's why I thought. And then Prabhupada says at the end of it, but this obedience is there. That is called surrender. So he uses the word obedience and surrender together. This obedience is there. That is called surrender. So I thought surrender. And because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, surrender unto me. So I thought, wow, that really takes me to something to do, something very tangible. So how do I know if I'm surrendering properly? Because we're all here because we want to. And, you know, having the other four noble aims of life is not a bad thing. Who here wants to live, you know, without any food to eat? Who wants to live in ill health? Who doesn't want to have fresh water to drink? You know, anyone here? No? Good. So four noble aims of life are okay if they're noble aims, if they're pious aims. You know, we don't want to just have millions of dollars in our bank account and destroy the earth. No, we want to have the natural gifts given by God due to our obedience to Him. That's okay. It'll help us towards prema. So how do I know if I'm surrendering properly, if I'm being obedient to the Lord? Any ideas? Very quick. Anyone who's not spoken yet? Prabhu. Well, how do you know if you're being obedient to the Lord? Yeah? Yeah? I am actually looking at you. Yeah? That's right, yeah? Any clues? How would you know if you're being obedient to the Lord, if you're surrendering? Do you have an answer? Okay. Okay, so you've got to surrender to another devotee, and if he's happy, you know you're surrendering. Very nice. And only because the time is short, I would like to have created more involvement, but I'm going to tell you my light. So my light is from this excerpt from Prabhupada. This is a lecture. This really, when I listened to this years ago, it really impacted me. Prabhupada says, if a person is actually executing devotional service, then he must be happy. I.e., if we're surrendering properly, we must be happy. I must be happy. If I'm surrendering properly, I must be happy. If he's not happy, this is Prabhupada again. I had a little interlude with my comment. Now, back to Prabhupada. If he's not happy, then he's not doing properly. So first thing is this. He might be doing something in the name of devotional service. If he's actually rendering devotional service, then he must be feeling. Then he has to rectify the process of his service. Not to change, but rectify the process. If you're actually executing devotional service, you must feel happy. If you don't feel happy, then you're not executing. There is some flaw. That's a lecture in 68. Because the process of devotional service, now it's me speaking, is susukam, very joyfully performed. So if we're not joyful, this should be a clue to us that there's something I need to rectify in my process of surrender. I'm not understanding surrender properly, or I may not be doing it correctly, because if I'm doing it correctly, I must be happy. That in itself is a whole topic, and I'd just like to give a little plug for a series of seminars we're going to do from April the 27th, beginning of that Saturday, and then one every Saturday. And on the fourth of those seminars, we'll be specifically talking about this surrender. Unpacking it from the very first purport of Prabhupada's Gita, he gives us the clue to correct surrender. And if we do it correctly, we will be happy. So today is also the auspicious appearance day of Srivas Pandit. Yes, please, I now need my notes. And if I have time, I will say a little something about Srivas Pandit. Anyone here to give me permission or to say I should stop? Okay, I'll carry on. So unfortunately, you can't see the quotes, but I'm just going to read a few verses from the CC and ask you, this is the question I'm going to ask you, so listen carefully. Srivas Pandit has got three brothers. See if you can pick up their names as I read, okay? All right? Three brothers, pick up their names. And I'll ask the ladies first, so ladies pay attention, yeah? So this is from C.C. Adilila, 10.8, but I will ask the men too. Oh God, this thing keeps coming up. Okay, the two brothers, Srivas Pandit and Sri Ram Pandit, started two branches that are well known in the world. Their two brothers were named Sripati and Sri Nidhi. These four brothers and their servants and maidservants are considered one big branch. So what are the four brothers, the three brothers, ladies? Sri Ram Pandit, very nice, gentlemen. Sripati, ladies. Sri Nidhi, very good, okay. So Sri Ram, Sri Nidhi, and Sripati, great. Okay, now this is from Adilila 10.8, purport, I think. I'm going to ask you who, when I read this, I'm going to ask you who Srivas Pandit was in a previous life and who the younger brother that's being mentioned, tell me the name of the younger brother that's mentioned here and who he was in a previous life, okay? In the Gaura Ganodesh Deepika, Srivas Pandit, Srivas, who's also known as Srivas Thakur, is described as an incarnation of Narada Muni. And Sri Ram Pandit, his younger brother, is said to be an incarnation of Parvata Muni, a great friend of Narada's. Okay, so who was Srivas Pandit in his last life? Narada Muni. What was the younger brother's name that's mentioned here? Sri Ram Pandit. Who was Sri Ram Pandit in his last life? Parvata Muni. Okay. I'm going to say a few other things here you're going to find out. Now, I'm going to read it and I'm going to ask you for the name of Srivas Pandit's wife and who she was in her last life and the name of his niece and who she was in her last life, okay? So Srivas Pandit's the name of his wife, who she was in her last life, and Srivas Pandit's niece, and who she was in her last life, okay? Srivas Pandit's, and I'll start with the men. Srivas Pandit's wife, Malini, is celebrated as an incarnation of the nurse Ambika, who fed Lord Krishna with her breast milk. And as already noted, his niece, Narayani, the mother of Thakur Vrindavan Das, the author of Chaitanya Bhagavat, was the sister of Ambika in Krishna Leela. Okay, so who was Srivas Pandit's wife? Malini. Who was she in her last life? Ambika. Who was Ambika? Krishna's nurse. That's right. What did she do for Krishna? She fed him breast milk. You meant cheating. Have you got it in front of you? They remember things because they repeat things. They're used to repeating things. We have to get used to repeating things. Then we'll remember. We'll assimilate. So let me see. Okay, who was the name of his niece? We're going to give the ladies a chance. The name of his Narayani. Who was she in her last life? She was Ambika's sister. Okay, you can now come in. Who was Narayani's son? I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this. I'm just seeing if you're really listening. Vrindavan Das. What did he write? Chaitanya Bhagavat. Very nice. Right. Jayanti's used to repeating things. Okay, we also understand from the description of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat that after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'm going to ask you the name of the town Srivas Pandit went to. So listen. We also understand from the description of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat that after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's acceptance of the Sannyas order, Srivas Pandit left Navadvip, possibly because feelings of separation, and domiciled at Kumarahatta. So what happened after Lord Chaitanya took Sannyas to Srivas Pandit? He felt separation, and what did he do? He left Navadvip. Where did he go to? Kumarahatta. Very nice. I actually have just, if we have time, I've got a little leela. That was many, many leelas took place in Srivas Pandit's home. Most of the Lord's not sannyas leelas took place in Srivas Anga, Lord, Srivas Pandit's home. Would you like me to read one? Is there time or should we pause now? Anyone in charge who can tell me what to do? Yeah? Okay. So this is Adilila chapter 17. One night, while kirtan was going on inside Srivas Thakur's house, a Brahmin named Gopal Chapal, the chief of the non-believers, who was talkative and very rough in his speech, placed all the paraphernalia for worshipping the goddess Durga outside Srivas Thakur's door. On the upper portion of a plantain leaf, he placed such paraphernalia for worship as Oda Pula, I don't know what that is, turmeric, vermilion, red sandalwood, and rice. So all these things are used for worshipping who? Durga. He placed a pot of wine besides all this, and in the morning, when Srivas Thakur opened his door, he saw this paraphernalia. Basically, he was trying to frame him. It's like you coming into a devotee's house and putting some, you know, bottle of beer there. So when his friends go in, they think he's drinking. He was trying to frame him. Srivas Thakur called for all the respectable gentlemen of the neighborhood and smilingly addressed them as follows. Gentlemen, every night I worship the goddess Bhavani. Since the paraphernalia for the worship is present here, now all you respectable Brahmins and members of the high castes can understand my position. So imagine I came into your home, Govinda, and I planted some beer in your house, in your fridge, because I knew that, you know, all these Brahmacharis were going to come to your house, and they were going to go into your fridge thinking they're going to find Lassie, and they thought they were going to see beer. And you said, look, just see, I'm a drunkard. Would you react like that? How would you react? How would we react if someone stitched us up like that? Go on Facebook, comment. It wasn't me. Someone's stitching me up. But he says he has no attachment to his reputation. He doesn't want to be known as a great devotee. He says, I'm a Durga worshipper. I drink wine. Can't you see? I do it every night. Then all the assembled gentlemen exclaimed, what is this? What is this? Who has performed such a mischievous act? Who is that sinful man? They called for a sweeper who threw all the items of worship far away and cleansed the place by mopping it with a mixture of water and cow dung. After 3 days, leprosy attacked Gopal Chapal, and blood oozed from sores all over his body. See, a devotee, we don't need to take revenge. We don't need to get back at someone who's hurt us. If they've actually done something wrong, the Lord will chastise them. We don't need to do it. We don't need to implicate ourselves in offense. If they've committed an offense, the Lord will take care of it. If they've not, then no problem. We don't need to then take vengeance. Incessantly covered with germs and insects biting him all over his body, Gopal Chapal felt unbearable pain. His entire body burned in distress. Since leprosy is an infectious disease, Gopal Chapal left the village to sit down on the bank of the Ganges underneath the tree. One day, however, he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passing by and spoke to him as follows, "My dear nephew, I am your maternal uncle in our village relationship. Please see how greatly this attack of leprosy has afflicted me. As an incarnation of God, you are delivering so many fallen souls. I am also a greatly unhappy fallen soul. Kindly deliver me by your mercy." Hearing this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared greatly angry, and in that angry mood, he spoke some words chastising him. "O sinful person, envious of pure devotees, I shall not deliver you. Rather, I shall have you bitten by these germs for many millions of years. You have made Srivas Thakur appear to have been worshipping the goddess Bhavani. Simply for this offense, you will have to fall down into the hellish life for 10 million births. I have appeared in this incarnation to kill the demons, and after killing them, to preach the cult of devotional service." After saying this, the Lord left to take his bath in the Ganges, and that sinful man did not give up his life, but continued to suffer. When Sri Chaitanya, after accepting the renounced order of life, went to Jagannath Puri, and then came back to the village of Kulia, upon his return, that sinful man took shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord, being merciful to him, gave him instructions for his benefit. "You have committed an offense at the lotus feet of Srivas Thakur," the Lord said. "First you must go there and beg for his mercy, and then if he gives you his blessings and you do not commit such sins again, you will be freed from all these reactions." Then the Brahmin, Gopal Chapal, went to Srivas Thakur and took shelter of his lotus feet. And by Srivas Thakur's mercy, he was freed from all sinful reactions. Can I just ask, if someone had done that to us, and then they were getting their comeuppance, and they came to us and they said, "Please forgive me," would we forgive them? If they had, bad-mouthed us, would we say, "Of course, no problem. You're forgiven. I just want your welfare." Or we'd think, "I'm glad you're getting your comeuppance." What would we do? Because this is what a devotee does. A devotee forgives. In fact, the devotee doesn't take offense to start with. The devotee intervenes on Krishna, between the person who's suffering and Krishna. "Krishna, I'm not taking offense. Forgive him." And these are the kind of qualities we need to try to cultivate. This is why we hear about these great personalities. I just finished this. Then the Brahmin Gopal Chapal went to Srivas Thakur's house and took shelter of his lotus feet. In Srivas Thakur's mercy, he was freed from all sinful reactions. Another Brahmin came to see the kirtan performance, but the door was closed and he could not enter the hall. It's just talking about more pastimes that took place at Srivas Anga, because there were plenty. So I'll pause there. I can wait a little bit after the class is finished. If anyone wanted to bring up any points, you're welcome to. If we need to stop now, we can stop. If there's any comments, please do, otherwise we'll stop. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.